This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
8 p.m. on Saturday, May 16th in Exhibit Hall A at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Visit brilliantlectures.org or you may call 713-974-1335 for more information. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And this evening, David Elliott will join us from Washington, D.C. to discuss President Barack Obama's first 100 days and about how everything seems to be happening all at once with all the activity. Are LGBT issues being lost in the mix? At 9:25, we have News Wrap and the latest news affecting the LGBT community, including gay and lesbian couples can now legally marry in Sweden and in the U.S. in the state of Iowa. New Hampshire's Senate has narrowly approved a marriage equality bill, and Maine's Senate has also passed a marriage equality bill. Then Carol Wyatt will be here to talk about a new social and civic group for GLBTs living outside the northwest corner of the Loop. They're calling themselves Northwest Corner. To introduce the group to the community, there's going to be a lunch party, that is, barbecue and cocktails, at the end of the month. The next Bayou City Women's Chorus Concert will be a celebration of the many different styles and traditions of African music and will perform the Texas premiere of An Exhortation, which is part of President Obama's victory speech from November 4th, 2008, arranged for women's chorus and musical accompaniment. Members of the chorus will be here with the details at 10 o'clock. And then Cecilia Wilson, Director of Faith of the Community Gospel Church, will discuss transgender outreach. And finally, at 10:40 this evening, we have our regular feature presentations from This Way Out. This week, a look at legislative action to add sexual orientation and gender identity to national hate crimes laws, and a profile of longtime activist Robin Oakes, who defines the focus of her work as breaking down the binary categories commonly used to define sexuality. So take a look at Queer Voices' online presence through queervoices.org and follow links from there to Queer Voices' Facebook page and Twitter sites. During the show each week, we post information about our guests and the music that we play here on that Twitter site. Jack.
Well, and before we go to David Elliott, a couple of announcements. First of all, the Transgender Unity Dinner was this past Saturday.
Last Saturday was wonderful. It was the largest crowd that ever.
Congratulations.
It was its 17th year and the largest crowd, so it was absolutely wonderful.
Despite you being MC.
Yeah, despite me being MC.
Well, you know we joke here. Cokie Roberts from National Public Radio is going to be in town tomorrow morning, so this may be difficult if you're at work. She'll be there at 9:15. She's going to speak at the Houston Public Library, and she's going to be talking about her book, We Are Our Mother's Daughters. And then this weekend is another dinner coming up, isn't it?
Which one?
Isn't it the HRC dinner this weekend?
No. It's 16th.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's the next 18th, I mean.
Okay. Trying to keep all that stuff in my head. Yeah.
Just missed
work.
It by a week, though.
Okay. With this on the line is David Elliott, and he's going to give us an update of the first 100 days, which will be a different angle that you probably heard and heard and heard.
Did he have 100 days?
Yes,
I mean, I didn't hear about
Wednesday.
That. David, would you tell us about it?
Well, yeah, I will, but, you know, first I have to tell you all about something a little bit exciting, something a little bit close to home that's happening in Washington, D.C. tonight, if I can.
Please do.
The Houston Astros baseball team is in town tonight. Now, the Houston Astros are in last place in the National League Central, and the Washington Nationals, who they are playing tonight right now, are in last place in the National League East. So these are two of the worst teams in baseball, in all of Major League Baseball. and a cool rain is falling down in Washington, D.C. The temperature here is about 53 degrees, and there's a light mist playing. And, you know, it looked ugly for the Washington Nationals early on because they came out and their pitching just blew up, and the Houston Astros took a 4-0 lead. But then the Houston Astros pitching just completely blew up, and now the score is Washington 9, Houston 4. It's one of the worst baseball games I've ever seen in my entire life, but both of these teams are so pathetic that they are lovable.
Well, I wouldn't even know about that.
Duh. So I just wanted to tell you all about that. Okay, so that's rather inconsequential. Now I want to tell you about what's important.
Well, what's interesting is I just opened up my computer, and I usually look at this site called electoral-vote.com, and I noticed that in the 2010 Senate races, Pennsylvania is blue.
Well, yeah, and in fact, we'll get to that. Because I have to tell you, Jack, I have to tell you, last week, okay, and I've been in Washington, D.C. for, gosh, coming up on 13 years now, if you can believe that. Last week was one of the most newsworthy weeks I have ever experienced in Washington. And it started last Tuesday when Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter signifying that, well, if you can't beat them, join them, announced he was going to give up on his 40-year membership in the Republican Party and become a Democrat.
Again?
Yes, again. Yeah, he started out as a Democrat way back in 1965. So Specter becomes the 59th Democrat in the United States Senate. If Al Franken of Minnesota is ever seated, he will become number 60, giving Democrats an important leg up when it comes to navigating the Senate's parliamentary rules. So that was last Tuesday, okay? Wednesday of last week was President Obama's 100th day in office. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that in a minute. But what also happened on Wednesday was that both houses of Congress passed Obama's budget blueprint. And this is important. This is arguably the most progressive budget ever passed by a Congress. The only one that could even compare would be the budget passed by LBJ and the Democrat-led Congress in 1965. That budget helped create the Great Society, and it helped lead to our federal highway system. Now, this budget is transformative. It is going to give us the opportunity for real comprehensive health care reform. And, you know, the line of demarcation on that is going to be whether will we end up with a quality, affordable health care plan that includes a public health insurance option so that everybody in the country gets covered. Nobody in the country is left without health insurance. But there are also a couple of other things that are really important in that budget. One of them is incredibly increasing lower income access to Pell Grants so that hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people can go to college who can't currently go. We are really moving in the direction of making college accessible to everybody in this country, and that's never been done before. And finally, you know, the budget also includes programs for developing jobs through clean energy. And, you know, there's so much ground to cover tonight, but all of these things, healthcare, clean energy, and college education, are really interconnected, and they're tied into fixing the economy. Healthcare makes up 1/6 of our economy, okay? You can't fix the economy unless you fix healthcare. But consider this. We want to create all these clean energy jobs, right? But we can't create the clean energy jobs unless we fix healthcare, because small businesses won't be able to afford to create the new jobs unless we bring their health care costs down for their employees. So we have to do that. But then consider this. If we create all of these clean energy jobs, we have to have a really well-educated workforce to be able to fill the jobs. So that's where the higher education part of this budget comes in. So you have kind of a triangular approach to passing the budget, but also fixing the economy. You can't do all of this unless you fix healthcare, unless you do clean energy, and unless you expand access to higher education. Now, so all of that was on Wednesday of last week, right?
You're making me dizzy. You're making me dizzy just talking about it.
Well, it's tough. It's tough to get your arms around all of it. All of that was on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, guess what? We learned that Supreme Court Justice David Souter will be stepping down. So there will be a Supreme Court nomination battle coming up beginning in about July or August. Well, mainly July, because Congress, unlike most of us, gets to go on vacation in August. So we'll have that going into the fall. We'll have a nomination battle. So all of that going on, and you know, Obama's 100th day, and you know, we've heard a couple of phrases regarding President Obama. You know, we've heard one phrase, which is "no drama Obama." You know, Obama had so much to deal with during his first 100 days in office. And I just gave you a little piece of it. But on top of that, he had two wars to contend with, Iraq and Afghanistan. He had the possible implosion of the government of Pakistan. He had nuclear threats to our allies in Iran and North Korea. All of this stuff. Another phrase that has emerged has been Obamaism. Obamaism is the concept that when you are in a great crisis, you try to do a whole lot at once. In other words, it's political jujitsu. You respond to this great crisis by seeking opportunity. And so you try to do these wonderful things involving health care and education and clean energy. But, and you knew that there was a but coming.
Oh, absolutely. I've been waiting for that other shoe.
Something has been missing here.
Okay.
And that is, where is the LGBT rights agenda? Where is the payback, for instance, for the fact that across the country, in state after state, red states and blue states, LGBT voters went to the polls in rather massive numbers last November and voted for Obama? What is in it for us?
Well, tell me, please.
You know, during the run-up to the inauguration, President-elect Obama was trying to quiet the furor over the fact that he had invited Pastor Rick Warren to give the invocation during his inauguration. And, you know, Obama defended his position. He said, well, I've been a consistent and fierce advocate of equality for gay and lesbian Americans. But the truth of the matter is, actually, so far, he hasn't done that much. Oh, yes, he's lifted a couple of anti-gay executive orders. Oh, yes, he's made some low to mid-level appointments that were good. And oh, yes, at 12:02 p.m. on Inauguration Day, if you look at the White House website, all of a sudden, you saw a White House website that was pro-LGBT and not anti-LGBT, as we had seen during the last 8 years. But the fact of the matter is, beyond that, President Obama hasn't done very much. And I want to suggest right now, in short order, that there are four things that he could do if he wanted to make this a priority. First of all, he could talk about LGBT rights the way he did during the campaign. You know, years ago, Bill Clinton, when he was running for president, he said, quote, "I have a vision and you are a part of it," close quote. And simply put, we haven't heard that from President Obama. Second, President Obama can move quickly to pass hate crimes legislation. Now, this legislation is moving through Congress as we speak, but it hasn't been on anybody's agenda. We haven't heard that much about it, and President Obama hasn't said anything about it, at least publicly. Third, President Obama could appoint a high-ranking, openly LGBT policy advocate to oversee government efforts toward LGBT equality. He has yet to make such an appointment. Fourth, President Obama could champion comprehensive LGBT civil rights legislation, which would ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And covering such areas as employment, education, and housing. He hasn't done that either. And, you know, we don't know when he's going to move, although we think it might be soon, maybe within the next month or two, on the issue of LGBT people serving openly in the armed forces. So, we have a historic presidency. We have great hope for the future. But once again, it kind of seems like LGBT people are being asked to take a seat at the back of the bus.
Yes.
We haven't seen the hope and the progress that we might have hoped for.
Yes. And there was discussion on Talk of the Nation today about lifting the ban. And it, you know, and I don't think that should be the top priority, but it's like that's something that should be done.
Well, and you know, it's a tough thing because, yes, I get that a rising tide lifts all boats, and we have to move on quality, affordable health care for all and clean energy and education. We've got to get our economy moving again.
Sure.
We all know people who have lost their jobs, gotten furloughed, gotten pay cuts, and we have to do something. But please, let us not be left behind.
Well, people are losing their jobs because of the economy, but we lose our jobs because we have no employment protection. We lose our housing because there's no protection. We aren't allowed to ride in the bus in some cases, figuratively, because we don't have a public accommodation protection. So, yes, we are all in the same boat, but it seems to me that we're the ones hanging on to a rope in the water behind the boat.
Right, and there are some states and municipalities that do have, or counties, that do have such protection, but there's nothing here in Texas. There's nothing here in the city of Houston. There's some executive orders, but there is no ordinances that are actually passed for protection.
Well, exactly.
And the word was that the federal government's going to take care of it if Obama's elected, but where is it?
So what do we do?
What's the answer?
Well, first of all, you all have to know that, you know, increasingly the eyes of Washington, D.C. are looking to Texas to see what's going to happen in the 2010 elections. You know, there's talk that a Democrat might win the U.S. Senate race in Texas. Now, all of a sudden, there's talk that a Democrat might win the governor's race in Texas. That's the buzz here in Washington, D.C. That doesn't answer the question that was just posed. That doesn't get you to LGBT equality. But as we have seen in the first 100 days, in some areas, elections matter. And so registering to vote matters, and community organizing matters, and getting out and registering other people to vote and engaging other community organizers to do this and this and this and that and the other thing. And those things matter. And that's where you start. Where you finish and where you win, I don't know. If it was an easy question to answer, we would have answered it already, and we would have done it already, and we would have achieved it already.
Right, but it's real disappointing for all those people who worked very hard in this election to get not only Obama elected, but a lot of the Democrats elected, so that we almost have a veto-proof, well, not veto-proof, but that we can get it through the House and the Senate. And exactly, where are we?
Well, you know, it's not all bad news. I mean, if you consider that for 4 or 6 years or so, we were playing defense
sure.
against a proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage in the country, and now we're about to pass hate crimes legislation, and here in D.C., we might be on the verge of getting same-sex marriage, joining Iowa and joining Vermont and joining Massachusetts. And I think I'm leaving a state out. But I don't have an easy answer to your question. It's frustratingly slow. It's painfully slow. It's arduously slow. And, you know, maybe it's time to get really, really ticked off and take to the streets again.
Yes. Yes.
And in fact, isn't Pride coming up in Houston?
Yes, so it'll be the last weekend in June. But that Pride in Houston is not really a protest type of thing. It's more or less a celebration.
It's a celebration of who we are.
Okay. Well, you know, you can celebrate and protest at the same time. You know, you could protest at a really like we do, we have a huge pride event here, and it's also a protest. It's a fantastic parade. You can protest and celebrate and have a good time. And I think I'm babbling here, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, you know, we're making great strides, and it's wonderful that certain states have the ability that same-sex marriage and all, but, you know, and that's really wonderful. We can all be married standing in the unemployment line because we can't keep our jobs because we have no protection. And somehow there's a paradox in that.
Right, and coming up in This Way Out, they're going to talk about the head of government in Iceland who is an open lesbian.
Yes, a wonderful... A former labor organizer and flight attendant, I might add.
Interesting.
Well, that tells us a lot about flight attendants.
Okay, well, and I think that means that we always have to be ready to take action, and getting people elected is one thing, but holding them accountable is a whole nother thing, and we need to do that in all people that we help get elected, starting from the cities, you know, going on through the state level. Although here in Texas, it's definitely hard right now on the state level because there are no Democrats elected statewide. But, you know, these people do make promises, and if they don't keep them, and certainly, you know, I think we need to give Obama a little bit more time in getting to this because he has a full plate, but we shouldn't be left behind.
Right. I mean, on the one hand, you know, it's been 105 days for Obama, and he has done some wonderful, wonderful things, but it really could be time to pick up the noise a little bit,
yeah.
You know, pick up the pace.
Well, I remain
step up the pressure.
I remain hopeful in that, you know, there's certain accountability, and there's been some talk by the talking heads on TV that he's been keeping his promises. He's been, you know, it's almost like he has a checklist somewhere, and he tries to keep each one of the things he said he would do. He's doing them, and it just may be he hadn't reached our portion of the list yet.
Well, there's some truth to that. I work very, very closely with labor, and one of labor's huge priorities is passage of the Employee Free Choice Act, which would make it easier for labor to unionize in places where you know where we work. And labor is really has really chosen to give Obama a pass for the first 6 months, maybe even longer than that, before they start moving the Employee Free Choice Act legislation through. Now, frankly, labor has a little bit more influence because of their numbers. You know, there are 10.2 million, you know, labor union members across the country than the organized LGBT community. But at some point, and, you know, frankly, if we don't see Don't Ask, Don't Tell lifted in the next month or 2 months, in the next 30 to 60 days, I will be very, very disappointed, and I also think that I will be a little bit surprised.
Although he needs to do it the right way, not the way it was done under Clinton.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, Clinton blew it, and yeah, right, agreed.
Okay. Well, David, we now have, tell us how we can get in contact with you.
Well, you can see, I am the communications director for a group called usaction.org and our sister online organization called truemajority.org. You can see our website at www.usaction.org and www.truemajority.org. Get on there and drop me a line.
Okay, and if you don't remember that, if you're in the car, just go to our website, queervoices.org. There's a link there. David joins us the first Monday of every month, and thank you very much for being with us.
You all take care.
Thank you. See you next month.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm John Torres.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 2nd, 2009. Joanna Sigurdardóttir, the lesbian named interim prime minister of Iceland in February, led her leftist coalition to a resounding victory in national elections this week. An alliance of Sigurdardóttir's Social Democrats and Left Greens won an absolute majority of 52% of the seats in parliament. That's a first for a left-wing government. The 66-year-old Sigurdardóttir was appointed to head a caretaker government earlier this year after the global economic crisis reached Iceland, leading to a banking collapse and major street protests, a rarity in Iceland against the conservative government of the Independence Party. The openly gay Per Christian Foss served briefly as interim prime minister of Norway in 2002. Sigurdardóttir's original appointment made her the first openly lesbian leader of a national government in modern times, and also her country's first female prime minister. While her sexuality was of little concern to most Icelanders, several pundits didn't think Sigurdardóttir could win a general election. But the former flight attendant and union organizer had served in two parliaments since 1978, earning the highest public approval ratings of any cabinet member. Her immense popularity for rejecting such trappings as a government limousine and championing numerous social causes apparently helped her win the election, though the hugely unpopular 18-year conservative government was certainly also a factor. Sigurdardóttir, who insists on a private personal life, married her lesbian partner, well-known writer Jonína Leósdóttir, in a 2002 civil ceremony. Sigurdardóttir said her top priority is to bring Iceland into the European Union and adopt the euro. That idea has split Iceland's population almost down the middle, and she'll face opposition from the left Greens in her own coalition government.
But Burundi has become the latest African nation to outlaw homosexuality. The provision in the country's new penal code makes private consensual adult homosexual acts a criminal offense, with up to 3 years in prison and heavy fines. The National Assembly reversed a Senate vote that had rejected the anti-gay provision, prompting thousands to join government-organized protest demonstrations. Under Burundi's constitution, the National Assembly prevails in cases of conflict between the two houses of parliament. President Pierre Nkurunziza quietly signed the legislation on April 22nd. The bill was part of a sweeping reform of the country's criminal code that also bans capital punishment, protects women and children from all forms of violence, especially sexual violence, and toughens laws on genocide. Amnesty International's Africa Program Director Erwin Vandenbort said that the generally good news is undermined by the government's decision to criminalize homosexuality in violation of Burundi's obligations under international and regional human rights law. It also flies in the face of Burundi's constitution, which guarantees the right to privacy. Human Rights Watch and dozens of other groups have also condemned the move. Health organizations in Burundi have said that the new law will limit the effectiveness of their work to curb HIV/AIDS.
Elsewhere on the continent, the 9 gay AIDS educators in Senegal who were freed from prison last week after an appeals court overturned their 8-year sentences following convictions for indecent and unnatural acts and criminal conspiracy are being threatened with death. Radio stations and newspapers in the country are urging people to attack them, with one station calling on listeners to hunt down and kill anyone suspected of being a homosexual. One of the African country's largest Islamic groups issued statements describing gays as vicious and perverts and accused them of spreading AIDS, even though the recently released men were in fact HIV outreach workers who focused on educating men who have sex with men about safe sex practices. Amnesty International called on the government to protect all gay men in the country and to repeal laws that criminalize consensual adult same-gender sex with up to 5 years in prison.
Hungary's parliament, however, has approved a registered partners law for same-gender couples. The measure passed 199 to 159, with support from the governing Socialist Party and the Alliance of Free Democrats. The country's constitutional court struck down a previous partnership law open to both same-gender and heterosexual couples just before it was to take effect on January 1st. The court said that the law granting marriage-like rights to registered heterosexual couples violated the special protections given to marriage by the Hungarian constitution. It was uncertain after the constitutional court ruling if Parliament would pass a law that only applied to gay and lesbian couples, but the new measure does just that. It includes most of the rights of marriage except the name, but does not include adoption or assisted reproduction. President Laszlo Solyom was expected to sign the measure, which would go into effect 2 months thereafter.
A gender-neutral civil marriage law took effect in Sweden on May 1st, allowing same-gender couples to legally marry in that country. Civil unions granting gay and lesbian couples the same legal status as married couples had been allowed under Swedish law since 1995. Parliament, concluding that separate was not equal, voted overwhelmingly to upgrade civil unions to full marriage earlier this year. The Lutheran Church, which was the state church until 2000 and counts almost 3 in 4 Swedes as members, has blessed civil unions. While it supported the new law, the church will not formally decide whether to sanction same-gender marriage ceremonies until October.
At least 360 same-gender couples applied for marriage licenses in Iowa on April 27th, the first day the U.S. State Supreme Court's matrimonial equality ruling went into effect. Judges waived the standard 3-day waiting period for some couples after they got their licenses, allowing them to marry that day. Iowa has no residency requirement, and the Des Moines Register reported that at least 26 marriage licenses were issued to same-gender couples from neighboring states such as Illinois and Minnesota, Nebraska and Wisconsin, although they won't be recognized in their home states. The U.S. federal government does not recognize the legal unions of same-gender couples in any state. Opponents of the Iowa High Court ruling delivered petitions urging county recorders not to issue licenses to lesbian and gay couples, but there were no reports of any officials doing that, and no major protest demonstrations. State agencies had informed county recorders the previous week that they could be removed from their position if they didn't follow the law and issue the licenses. The Iowa legislature adjourned on April 26th without considering any measure that would allow a public vote on constitutionally reversing the marriage equality ruling. The earliest that complicated process could take place under state law would be in 2012. Iowa is the third state after Massachusetts and Connecticut to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. They'll be joined by Vermont in September.
Meanwhile, the New Hampshire Senate somewhat unexpectedly passed a marriage equality bill this week. A 3-2 committee vote had recommended against passage, but the full Senate approved the bill by a 13-11 margin after an amendment was added to allow religious institutions to refuse to marry same-gender couples. The state House passed similar legislation by a 186-179 vote in March, but without that provision. As of this report, Democratic Governor John Lynch has not signaled if he will sign or veto the measure after the relatively minor differences are resolved in the two legislative bodies. He's previously expressed support for the state's existing civil unions law and his belief that marriage should remain exclusively heterosexual. Unlike Vermont, where legislators overrode a veto by Republican Governor Jim Douglas, there do not appear to be enough votes in New Hampshire's legislature to do that.
Maine Senate also approved a marriage equality bill this week by a vote of 21 to 14, and after an amendment to require a statewide referendum on the issue was defeated, it moves next to the state house. If it passes there, Democratic Governor James Baldacci recently told well-known blogger Pam of Pam's House Blend that, "I was opposed to this for a long time, but people evolve, people change as time goes by." If marriage equality is enacted in Maine, opponents have vowed to initiate a petition drive to place the issue before the voters.
New Mexico will provide retirement health insurance to domestic partners of state workers under an agreement with the American Civil Liberties Union, which had filed a lawsuit demanding that action. It charged that New Mexico's different treatment of gay and lesbian employees was a violation of the state constitution's equal protection guarantees. Both same-gender and heterosexual employees and their domestic partners will be covered.
And finally, Agence France-Presse reported this week that monks in Thailand will be teaching proper etiquette to gay Buddhist novices to help curb what they call flamboyant behavior, including wearing lipstick and overly tightening their saffron robes. Officials cited numerous reports of new monks plucking their eyebrows, walking with an exaggerated swing of the hips, and carrying handbags, which they said were damaging the reputation of the conservative Buddhist faith. They said that while monks who had sex in their sleeping quarters would be thrown out, homosexuality itself was not banned. Otherwise, said a senior Buddhist monk, more than half of them would be defrocked.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 2, 2009. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we have a stranger back here. It's been a while, Carol, since you've been on our air.
Yeah. Hey, kids.
Yes.
And Carol used to be part of Pride. She was the president of the board for, what, 2 years?
Just 1 year.
One year. Well, that's retirement.
There you go. Yeah. 4 years altogether.
But you have been involved in a number of maybe not overly highly profile type organizations, but you have been working behind the scenes on a number of things. And one of the things you do is the Women's Happy Hour that you do. It's the first Wednesday of the month at Meteor.
Right, from 7 to 10. We call it Professional Women's Happy Hour at a very nice upscale bar, a very nice and I would say nice looking collection of women, and we're always looking for new friends to join us, so please come on out. And let me just tell you, I know sometimes it's difficult or uncomfortable to walk into a bar that you've never been into before or may not know anybody there. Come find me. I will introduce you around. I'll try to make some contacts for you.
I was always amazed that your Christmas parties, you sort of have like, and I don't mean this offensively, you sort of have like a throne there, without a throne. But you always are, you always welcomed everybody in there. Hi, this is so-and-so. And Jennifer's real good at that, too. Not everybody does that.
And it's so important, I mean, to let people know that they're appreciated, that they're welcomed. And I just think it's that extra little touch that is too often lacking.
You also do a thing called Social Notes?
I do. It is a website and an email service for the goings-on of the lesbian community in Houston, although it's not really limited to lesbians. Probably 90% of what I write about would be of interest to anyone in our community. It's got everything from a calendar of events to lists of organizations, business networking, even lost pets or pets that need new homes. So it's socialnoteshouston.com. And I would encourage everyone to visit. You can sign up to receive the email blast when I update the site. It's only about twice a month. I promise you I'm not trashing your mailbox.
Well, you're starting a new group, and this is sort of really pioneering, trying to do something outside the loop.
Well, Jack, I know you live inside the loop, so you may not know, but there are actually other groups outside the loop.
No, we definitely know that.
We definitely know that,
and that's actually sort of one of the problems is that almost everything in this community does happen in the Montrose area,
right,
or associated with Montrose, and that there are people, certainly with, you know, on the caucus list, we know there are people all over.
We're everywhere.
We are everywhere, and we are out to prove that there is life outside the loop. That's our tagline. So our new group is focusing on GLBTs outside the northwest corner of the loop. In a real spasm of creativity, we have named ourselves Northwest Corner. make it easy to find. But we are we're hoping to build a social and civic organization. We've got a steering committee of five people together who are putting on an initial launch party on Friday, May 29th at my house. It'll be a barbecue and cocktails. And from that initial socializing, we will follow up within a week or two later with a business meeting to talk about what we really want to be as an organization. The steering committee views their role as to bring everybody together and then let the membership guide us on what we want our group to be and how formal we want it to be. Excuse me. I got a little bit of a frog in my throat. But the steering committee has designated four main mission elements for our organization. If you'll permit me to just read those, so
sure.
I did them correctly. I think I'll read them in an English accent just for something different.
Okay, sure.
I was just kidding. Our group organizes a variety of social events and networking opportunities for our members. We serve as a connecting point for the broader GLBT and Houston communities. We bring GLBT-friendly businesses and consumers together. And finally, we want to unite and empower the GLBT residents of Northwest Houston. Now, having said that, I'll tell you that we're already getting calls from people going, this sounds like fun. Can we be a part of it even though we aren't in your targeted geography? And so the answer is absolutely. We don't want to exclude anyone. Our only caveat is that if we do choose to do any civic-oriented events, they will be focused in our targeted geography, which is the southern boundary is the north part of the loop and 290. I'm diagramming with my hands for those of you at home.
Just look carefully at your radio. You
right.
can see this.
I-45 north is our eastern boundary, and then we're using the tollway as the north and western boundaries.
Great. So, and you know, you put on a big Christmas party. Do you have any idea where people come from at your Christmas party?
I think everywhere.
Yes.
Because Social Notes reaches almost 1,600 subscribers now, and that's my main way of communicating to the community about the Christmas party. And we draw about 350 people a year, and they're from everywhere. I don't collect demographic information. It would be interesting
you don't
to know, though.
Do a survey, right?
Yeah. The line at the door is long enough.
Right.
One more thing. You're not coming in without giving us your zip code.
Well, and that's just like the Pride Parade. I mean, sometimes we did some informal surveys, and like a third of the people came from outside the Houston metropolitan area, which surprised us all.
Yeah.
That happens, and that definitely, especially now, that people are having kids. People feel more comfortable, outside the loop. And in fact, it's my understanding that's probably hurt the bars, not just here in Houston, but all over the country, is that we don't need the bars as much as we used to. You're a lot more comfortable going with your straight friends to events.
Right. I've read that. Some of that as well, and I think online dating is also, or hookups, I'm not sure you would call it dating sometimes, but that apparently is hurting the bar scene as well. But we have a lot of solid citizens out there who would like to come together and socialize, even though we've chosen to live out in the hinterlands. And we just think it's a great opportunity to build a community out there. We're not trying to diss Montrose. We may even rent a bus someday and come visit you. I'm just saying, it could happen.
Take the tour.
Yes.
Got it.
And there's actually, I think, a bar or two outside the area. And I don't know. I don't follow it as much as I used to.
There's one up on I-45 North. What is that thing called? See, I came so prepared. I printed out stuff, Jack, and you're screwing me up.
Well, and I didn't mean it that way because I should know it myself if I brought it up. But I think it's changed names a couple times or something.
Well, actually, you can go to the Social Notes networking pages, and there is a listing of bars and restaurants that people have recommended. And that bar is listed there. And there's also one down in the Clear Lake area now that I supposedly is doing fairly well. Club Adam and Eve, I think it's called.
So what do you feel? I mean, I know you sort of want people to come together and sort of make decisions on this, but what do you feel about organizing that this would be more of a social club or a civic?
I think the steering committee is leaning a little bit towards more social, whether it be progressive dinners or just dining out together, parties, book clubs even. But You know, I've always got the little civic element in there as well. And remember the old program we did at Pride called Pride in Action?
Yes.
Where we sent out groups of gay volunteers to participate in straight volunteering events around the city as an outreach effort to let people know that we are good citizens of the community and of this city, and we're going to contribute just like everybody else. And we had some really good success with that. And I personally would like to see our group adopt that idea as an element, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I would really bet that in most of the neighborhood associations and super neighborhood associations, there are probably a lot of GLBT people involved.
Well, for example, one of our steering committee members, Ollie Perry, is very involved in the Greater Inwood Partnership, which is a big civic conglomerate of neighborhoods outside the Loop.
And Patrick McElvey, who is very much involved in the Heights area up in Super Neighborhood Number 22. I mean, you know, he does so much work in that thing. So yes, and I mean, you know, the fact that a lot of us, if you buy homes, more than likely you move outside the Loop.
Well, let's face it, they're more affordable
yes,
out there, right?
You get more for your money, yes, definitely.
Right. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a frog in my throat. But let me give everybody out there some information. Our website is northwestcorner.org or nwcorner.org. And go to the events page, and there is that will take you to a link to the Evite for the party on the 29th, and we would love for everybody to come. Every element of our community is certainly welcome. We would appreciate you RSVPing because we're catering the barbecue, and we want to make sure that we have enough of everything. We're asking everybody to bring $10 to cover the cost of the barbecue. The steering committee is pooling our pennies to pay for the beverages for the evening, so we'll be serving beer and wine and vodka-based drinks to meet the needs of our gay community, right?
Well, that's great, and I'm, you know, and after this happens, I'd love for you to come back and give us a little report on, you know, where it goes, because I don't think this has really been done, you know, especially like you know how to organize things.
Well, thank you, Jack. I think there are some, and we've got really good talent on the committee too. So it's been a really nice exercise in starting something from scratch. There are some more social organizations outside the Loop that I've heard of. I just want to tell everybody, if there is an interest that you have, whether it be your geography or your hobbies or interest, and there's not a group that meets your needs, think about starting one. And Social Notes can help you reach out to the community to solicit membership. Social Notes can help you promote your events within the community. I'll be happy to help get you started in any way that I can, because I think it's important for us to always be keeping fresh.
Well, that's an absolute good advice, because nowadays with the computer and Facebook and Twitter and all this type of stuff, it is a lot easier to start a group, and you don't have to necessarily be in the middle of Montrose. I mean, there are tons of organizations within the community, but there's lots of organizations that probably should be that we don't have. There used to be a movie group that used to go out and see movies
yeah.
every so often, that's a great idea. And there's probably other people that have the same interest.
You know, I think there are all sorts of people that do the really heavy lifting in our community for AIDS support and assisters supporting the needs of lesbians with chronic health conditions, and those are all really important
yes.
things. I personally sense that there's also just a crying need for socialization in our community, to mm-hmm. find good ways to meet friends. And we were talking about dating
mm-hmm.
sites earlier.
Oh, yeah.
I hate dating sites. I don't want to meet anybody that way. I'd rather meet them through mutual friends and in a comfortable setting to actually get to know somebody. And so I think although our work will mainly be social, I think it does fill an important need in our community.
Great. Well, Carol Wyatt came to visit us talking about a new group that she's talking about, Northwest Corner of Houston area, but it's not just limited to that. If you need some more information, you can go to queervoices.org, and her link to her website is on there. Carol, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for your time this evening.
Thank you, Carol.
Y'all take it easy.
All right.
You're
bye-bye.
Listening to Queer Voices.
Thanks, Doug.
And I love the cool way you look at me. It was a long road, it was a long time, it was a long way around this stuck mind. It was a way that I was looking at the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. It was a late night, it was the late fall, it was a late hour to make a late call. Sometimes it takes a stand, sometimes it's quite empirical, and sometimes it's so grand. But most of all, it needs to be a suddenly both faith. It's a leap of faith. Well, it was a new dream, it was an old car, it was a back road and a bright star. About time. Sometimes the earth is shaking, sometimes the world is mine, but most of all. was a lifeline. It was a long rest. It was a lifelong dream. Had a hard test. And it was the things that I was bearing and the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. Sometimes it takes a miracle. Sometimes it takes a stand. Sometimes it's quite a miracle. And sometimes it's so grand. But most of all, it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith. It was the way that I was looking at me.
Sick of the propaganda that they hate you. Ignorant and hateful because they don't understand us. Ban us from living our lives. Living our lives. Second-class citizen, give him this right. Bash me, bash me, I'll bash you back. You're messing with the wrong fact, you're about to get checked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. Watch out now, girly boy can fight. What's the matter, son? Oh, I'm too tight. You can try to diss, but you know the consequence is payback. I'm the Michael Jordan of the gay rap. Take that, shot my style. Top or bottom, I'm versatile. Man holding hands, walking down the block. Don't be jealous, cause we're so damn hot.
Come on, let me hear it loud. Don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. Don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud. Don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. Don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound.
Brand new generation taking over. Freedom fighters, some call us soldiers. Unity between you and I. Sick of being a punchline of crucified. Try to tear us down, but still we rise. I'm sick of the games, I'm sick of the lies. From the gay ghettos to the Malibu mansion. But they can't keep us down, cause we keep on dancing. Even got the queens, switched from disco. Got them all dancing from Greenwich to Frisco. Latino play, Papi Chulo Loco. Number one homo, a logo, let's go.
Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound.
A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I'll bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I'll bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked.
Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, don't get it proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young, gay, and proud. Young, gay, and proud. Young, gay, and proud.
That was Captain Mayak, a song called Young, Gay, and Proud from 2008 and the Young, Gay, and Proud hip-hop CD. Before that, Trent Fury, Leap of Faith from her 2007 CD, True Compass. And then before that, in a set of three, we had Jennifer O'Connor, Here With Me, and that was from a 2008 CD, Here With Me.
The Brilliant Lecture Series was created to provide a forum in which everyone, including you, can hear legendary icons discuss their lives and careers. Join us this Saturday, May 16th, at the George R. Brown Convention Center as we present a rare and candid conversation with Russell Simmons. Ranked as one of America's top 25 most influential people of the past 20 years, Russell Simmons is a cultural pioneer. His groundbreaking vision has influenced music, fashion, television, and film for millions around the world. The Brilliant Lecture Series is proud to bring you this up-close experience with one of America's most fascinating people. At 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, May 16th, in Exhibit Hall A at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Visit brilliantlectures.org or you may call 713-974-1335 for more information. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
The Democratic Party-controlled U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill this week by almost 75 votes to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the country's hate crimes laws. The Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act gives the U.S. Justice Department the power to investigate and prosecute bias-motivated violence. The targeted victim categories of actual or perceived race, color, religion, national origin, gender, or disability would be expanded to include LGBT people. The Justice Department would also be able to provide financial and other assistance to state and local jurisdictions or take the lead if necessary, especially if local authorities are blinded by the prejudice that prompted the crime. The measure now moves to the Senate. A similar bill died in Congress in 2007 after George W. Bush threatened to veto it. President Obama is expected to sign the measure into law if it reaches his desk. The bill is familiarly known as the Matthew Shepard Act to honor the Laramie, Wyoming gay college student who, in October 1998, was lured into a truck by two assailants believing they were gay. They drove to the outskirts of town where they robbed and brutally beat him, tied him to a fence post in the bitter cold, and left him for dead. The bicyclist who found him 18 hours later originally mistook him for a scarecrow. Matthew died 5 days later. Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson are each serving life sentences for the murder. Some GOP Congress members voted for the hate crimes measure, but most argued against it during floor debate, none more egregiously than Virginia Fox of North Carolina.
There was a bill, the hate crimes bill that's called the Matthew Shepard bill, is named after a very unfortunate incident that happened where a young man was killed. But we know that young man was killed in the commitment of a robbery. It wasn't because he was gay. The bill was named for him. The hate crimes bill was named for him. But it's really a hoax that continues to be used as an excuse for passing these bills.
Matthew's mother was in the House gallery during those remarks. Judy Shepard has been campaigning for the hate crimes bill for almost a decade. She spoke with MSNBC news analyst Rachel Maddow.
You probably knew there would be a contentious debate surrounding this legislation in the House, but did you have any idea that you were in for that kind of personal attack on your son?
Well, attacks of lesser consequence, I guess, have been said about Matt since the beginning. And in 2007, when it passed the House, the same sort of vitriol was spoken from the floor then as well. I did not expect it to ever be called a hoax. Anyone who's done any research into what happened to Matt know that it was a hate crime, even though technically we couldn't prosecute it that way because there was no hate crime law in Wyoming at all and no federal hate crime law protecting sexual orientation.
Congresswoman Fox later said that she was clarifying her comments. She said that Matt's death was a tragedy. She said the term hoax was a poor choice of words. I have to say that doesn't really sound like an apology to me, but I don't want to put those words in your mouth. Does it change the way that you feel about it?
No. It's apologizing for semantics, not for her sentiment or actually what she said, her insensitivity and her ignorance. She's apologizing for semantics.
The good news is that the hate crimes bill did pass in the House yesterday by that very large margin. Do you think that it's going to make it through the Senate, too? And can you tell us what would change for Americans if it did become law?
I'm very hopeful this time. It will be more difficult in the Senate because it's the rules are different, the way they have to, the procedure is different. We know we have the president's support. We know they have the support of the senators. It's just how it's presented now that will be the key. I'm very hopeful that all legislation protecting the gay and lesbian community will be addressed during Obama's administrations. And how it will change, in Matt's case in particular, in Wyoming, because the federal law did not cover sexual orientation as a protected category, Laramie was not eligible for federal resources, for federal financial help. They had to furlough four employees to pay for the investigation and the subsequent trials. That's not right. That's not right. And in any community, as you said earlier, where it appears that the legal entities are not prosecuting a crime because of their own prejudice, the federal government can step in and actually do the right thing. And the crimes that are committed as hate crimes, they're meant to send a message to a community, not to an individual. It's a totally different type of crime.
MSNBC News analyst Keith Olbermann names three worst persons in the world during his weeknight countdown program. Virginia Fox won the dubious top title two nights in a row this week.
Our winner again, Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina. She is now blaming her remarks before the passage of the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill by the House on ABC News. She called the story that Shepard was beaten, his skull fractured, then tied to a fence post for 18 hours and left to die because his murderers knew he was gay, a quote, hoax. The Congresswoman now calls that choice of words poor and offers the standard insincere apology, quote, I am especially sorry if his grieving family was offended by my statement. You're either sorry or you're not, Congresswoman. The burden does not lie on if somebody else was offended. I was referring to a 2004 ABC News 2020 report on Mr. Shepard's death. ABC's 2020 report questioned the motivation of those responsible for Mr. Shepard's death. Referencing this media account may have been a mistake, but it was a mistake based on what I believed were reliable accounts. The girlfriends of the two murderers testified at their trials that the men had plotted beforehand to rob a gay man and were not under the influence of drugs at the time. In the ABC report, though, one of the women said she had lied under oath just to enhance the murderer's gay panic defense. Also, the murderers suddenly claimed they had been high on meth for a week. However, several interviewees also insisted to ABC that one of the murderers had known Matthew Shepard socially and known he was gay. Congresswoman Fox apparently didn't see that part of the report. Congresswoman, you are digging yourself in deeper. Apologize sincerely this time or resign. Get out and take your myopic view of the world with you. Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina, today's worst person in the world.
That was MSNBC News analyst Keith Olbermann, and I'm Greg Gordon for This Way Out.
Hi, this is Dan Matthews, author of Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir, and Senior Vice President of PETA. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
About a year ago, literary commentator Janet Mason was really taken with C.A. Conrad's Deviant Propulsion, so she couldn't wait to sink her teeth into his latest work.
Visionary, surrealist, queer, renegade poet, at once truth seeker and truth dispeller, C.A. Conrad brings us The Book of Frank, a collection based on a character by the same name, published in 2009 by Chax Press, Tucson, Arizona. Frank is everywhere and everyone, the son of a woman who keeps her nine miscarriages in a jar, burps each one, and tells her living child, "You are too big for a jar, my child. You will betray me for the rest of your life." Frank grows into a man who is forever a boy and is not afraid to put on a wig, mix himself up a few instant cowboys, engage in outrageous acts as a shadow puppet, all the while pointing out that others are doing the same. "I love us with this wig," Frank said. "It makes our voices change. You wear the wig and ask my lips to find you in the dark I wear the wig and track you with my tongue. Frank is a sin eater, sneaking a piece of fried chicken that lay across the corpse, absorbing sins. And something inside him spread its wings, something intending to stay. More than a character, Frank is the understanding that for every action there is a reaction, and the length of time that passes may just enlarge the ultimate consequence. All the cats Frank dropped as a boy from the 33rd floor came leaping back in one runaway lion. Frank hid in the closet, finger to his lips. The paws open cleaver swooped under the door. He lost one damn fine shoe and then the foot. None can deny that Frank is a little sick and twisted, but as you spend time with Frank, entering his world by leafing through the pages of his life, it is impossible to deny that Frank is also profound. He is the dispenser of human wisdom, allowing us to see the world inside out and upside down, ultimately addressing our own human foibles and insecurities. Frank hammers carrots all day. It works. The earth can't leave us. This is Janet Mason on Queer Literature and Life for This Way Out.
American Pie.
Bye.
Longtime activist Robin Oakes is the editor of the Bisexual Resource Guide and the quarterly publication Bi Women. She's also a teacher and researcher. Oakes discusses her convention-challenging work with Dixie Trykle and Pat Nelson.
Robin, tell us about your background and what you're doing.
I live in Boston, Massachusetts, and I am a marriage equality activist. I'm on the board of Mass Equality. As most people know, we've had a really wonderful 5 years where we actually fought for marriage equality, won it, and kept it. I'm also a speaker and writer. I travel around the country speaking about identity and labels. In particularly, my specialty is bisexual identity, and a lot of my work is focused around challenging false binaries. And not just around sexual orientation, but all of the false binaries that try to put people into two and only two groups. I used to be very upset and personally offended when people wouldn't understand bisexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people would pretend that there are two boxes, gay and straight, and nothing in between. And at some point, I guess I realized that it's not really about bisexuality. It's that we really like to put things into boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like there to be only two. To do this about biological sex. A myth that there are only two sexes, and one is the opposite of the other, and that there are only two genders. So just the whole idea that we do that all the time, we do that with race, we think about race as being black and white, and that leaves out a huge number of people who are bi and multiracial, but it also, again, leaves out all kinds of other groups of people. So once I think about it that way, it feels a little bit less personal, and a little bit more like, oh, those silly humans. You know, and then I feel a little bit more like I'm willing to do the education and the working with them, because I don't feel like it's just like evil, nefarious plot, and instead it's just like, oh, those people, they're being lazy. They haven't thought about this stuff yet. Let's start thinking about it.
How did you get started in all this?
Well, I came out as bisexual in 1976, but only to myself. It was a big secret because I had this feeling that if I told anybody else, it would be the end of the world, and really was afraid to tell anyone else. And I only knew one other person in the whole world who identified that way. And she was so charismatic and cool that she could get away with it. And I didn't think that I had that kind of latitude. And so basically, I kept quiet for 5 years. I moved to Boston. I looked in the newspaper. There was a discussion group about bisexuality. Like one time, it was called the Women's Wrap at the Women's Center, and the topic was bisexuality. I was so happy. I was there. I remember it was just a few hours after I saw the notice, and I was there. And I walked in the room, and there were 20 women in the room, 19 of whom identified as bi, and one who was a lesbian who liked bi women. And I still remember her. But I just thought I had died and gone to heaven. I was so happy. I just remember sitting there and grinning, because I had felt so alone and so unsupported, and sitting in a room with 19 women who identified as bi, I just remember smiling so much that my cheeks hurt. And then a group of women from that meeting ended up starting a support group called the Bivocals. We met monthly for about 10 years.
Wow.
And we were each very different from one another, but we learned a lot from each other. And then our group helped two other groups start, and then those two groups started the Boston Bisexual Women's Network.
What are some of the issues or questions that people bring up to you?
One of the workshops that I do, because I really believe that we simply don't understand or we don't think much about what labels mean and what they don't mean. And one of the exercises I do is I actually talk about Kinsey and Klein and Storms and some of the ways that different researchers have tried to map or describe or model sexual orientation. And then I have people fill out a one-page anonymous questionnaire which asks questions about their attractions and their fantasies and their behavior, past, present, in the past month, before age 16, overall, and in the past month for different categories. And I also ask them what word or words do they use to describe their sexual orientation. I ask, if you could be anywhere on the scale, where would you wish to be and why? It's not to say people actually get to decide that, but it's more of a cultural question, exploring what our values are. And so then we fill all that out, and I have people turn them in, and then I shuffle them and redistribute them so that everybody in the room is now representing someone else. Then we look at the data. And one thing that is clear from the first moment is that there are people all over the spectrum. It's not binary.
You have a new book out.
I'm the co-editor of a book called Getting By, B-I. That's an anthology of people from 32 different countries talking about their lives. And the new edition, which is coming out in June, is going to be by the same name, second edition. And that book's going to have 42 different countries represented. And some of the improvements that we made, we doubled the number of voices from African countries. We added a whole bunch of Muslim voices. You know, I basically looked and tried to think, what's missing here? What could be better? And obviously, always a lot. It's an ongoing process, but we really did a lot of outreach and increased the diversity of the book and the voices in the book.
People telling stories about their experiences or identity or...
Yeah, there's a chapter called What is Bisexuality? There's a chapter called Why Bi? Like, why would you use that word? There's a chapter on coming out, a chapter on relationships, a chapter on the language of desire, which is a lot of poetry mostly. There's a chapter on community. What does it mean to have or not have bi community? There's a chapter on politics. What do those bisexual people want? There's a chapter called Crossing Lines, which is about how identities intersect, gender and sexual orientation, race and sexual orientation, religion and sexual orientation. And then the last chapter that we're adding to the new book is called Bisexual Geographies, which is really about how geographic location affects identity. There's one chapter written by a woman in Zimbabwe about lesbian and bi women in Zimbabwe, and she talks a lot about how cultural norms and gender roles affect their experience of identity. And so the book is amazing. We built this stage, and all these other people came out and got their voices heard, and a lot of the voices in there are voices that have never been heard before. I really believe that the stage is beautiful and what is on that stage is amazing, and the voices in that book are phenomenal.
What is your vision? What do you see 5, 10, 15, 20 going down the road?
Actually, what I'd like to see is a lot of people say, well, I want to live in a world where there are no labels anymore. I don't really want that. I want to live in a world where the labels exist, but they don't matter in the same way they matter now. Being bisexual or lesbian or gay or queer or whatever is just like, oh, that's nice. And you're left-handed too? That's nice. That's what I want to live in. Like, not to erase our differences, because I think our differences are wonderful and beautiful, but just to live in a world where our differences aren't cause for oppression.
Spanish and Chinese versions of Robin Oakes' anthology, Getting By, are scheduled for publication later this year. She spoke with Pat Nelson and Dixie Treichel. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, John Torres, Michael LeBeau, Rex Watson with Bill Kelly, Janet Mason, Dan Matthews, Steve Pride, and Dixie Treichel and Pat Nelson contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle for his Bi music medley. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WEFT Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
This is Brian Levinka
It's Jennifer Renee.
And one of the interesting things about Houston is I keep finding out about different organizations that I never knew existed, and tonight is another one. It's the Transgender of Faith, a ministry of the Community Gospel Church, and I really didn't even know about this.
Yeah, and we have to hear Cecilia Wilson, director of the faith, and June, her partner. How are y'all this evening?
We're doing very well. Jennifer and Brian, thank you for having us on the show tonight.
And a personal thanks for being the church being a platinum sponsor of the Transgender Unity Banquet last Saturday, which I had the pleasure of being MC of that. So y'all are great. Thank you very much. Well, tell us about the outreach, transgender outreach. How did this begin, first of all?
Well, our pastors, John and Christopher Wellington, decided after many years of ministering in the Houston area to the gay and lesbian community, they thought that there was a need to minister to the transgender people of Houston because it's kind of like a blank space there. No one was really reaching out to the trans people.
Or just heathens. That's, you know.
That's what.
Sometimes the T is silent, you know.
Yes, the T's been silent way too long. Yeah.
You got to bring it to.
There are churches that allow transgender people to come to them, which is a great thing. But
the key word there is allow.
Allow, yes.
It's not. It's, you know, not, they're not,
not to
that.
Seek out and bring them to you.
Yes, and that's what the pastors Chris and John felt the need to was to start a ministry that was focused on the transgender people and bringing them to their faith in God. And a lot of transgender people have been kicked out of their churches and told that God does not
y'all
love them.
Y'all see me raise my hand.
This is Radio Jennifer.
and as I was, I used to be a minister in a church one time, and when they found out that I was trans, so they called a special board meeting and said, your services are no longer required, basically, because of being trans.
Baptist church, was it?
It was not a Baptist church. It was non-denominational, and it was not in Houston. So.
Okay.
Now, where is this this church located?
The church is located in the Heights area at 608 Aurora, and that's right off of 610 and 45 in that area up there.
What's the what exit would you take to get there?
Is that like the main exit? Link or
if you're going north on 45, you can take the North Main exit and just go up North Main, and Aurora runs off of North Main to the left just before you get to 610.
Okay.
And I know it as being close to Spanish Flowers because I love it.
It's just north of Spanish Flowers.
Everyone out there knows where Spanish Flowers is.
And if you don't, call Brian.
Yes.
Okay. If you're coming from the Montrose area, it's real easy to get there from the Montrose because you just go straight up Montrose to Studewood, and then it turns into Studemont, and then it eventually runs into North Main. And when you get to North Main, turn left and just go up a few blocks, and it's on the left. It's very easy to find.
And what are some of the services that a transgender person would receive if they attended one of these sessions? Or
the Transgenders of Faith has a meeting. It's we call it a support group meeting, and it meets the first Monday night of every month. In fact, we just had one tonight. And we get together. We have prayer. We allow people to share what God has done in their life and what God is doing in their life. And it gives trans people an opportunity to open up and share what things are bothering them in life. And as you know, Jennifer, and as I know, we go through a lot of stuff that a lot of people can imagine. And so we need to know that God is our friend and God loves us. The topic that we discussed tonight was, what does it mean to be a friend of God? And we go around the room kind of like you do in other support groups that we've been to, but it's mostly focused on Christian things and what people need to know in their lives and how God plays a major role in people's lives. And then, of course, we make our church available to trans people because our church is made up mostly of gay and lesbian Christians, and we have some straight people there, and everybody's welcome, of course. But we let people know that trans people are.
You mean you allow them. Straight people?
They're kind of minority, but we allow them to come.
You got to sprinkle them in every once in a while.
We got to balance it out, you know.
We're all one big happy family.
Well, I don't. Thank God eliminated anyone.
Now, June, what is your role in the church? You're kind of quiet over there.
I'm a co-director with Cecilia of Transgenders of Faith. We've been together as a couple for nearly 4 years now, and we do most things together.
Yeah.
But really, her biggest role in Transgenders of Faith is she's the research and development department. She can find things on the internet and does research. And I will say, you know, we need to find out this information. And she'll come back to me and present it to me and give me information. And one of the things that makes this ministry so unique is that we have not been able to find anything like it, a model like this. Anywhere in the nation. We've checked GLBT churches all over the country, and, you know, a lot of them, as I said earlier, accept trans people in their services, but they don't have a ministry that's just totally dedicated to meeting the needs of these transgender people. And that's what makes Transgenders of Faith so unique.
It seems like Houston's kind of progressive on the transgendered issue. It seems like, you know, kind of the things we have going on here.
That's the wonderful thing about Houston.
I agree.
That we can come together and we can come out. And as I've preached in my sermons in the church, you know, the gay and lesbian people have been out for a long time, and we're thankful for people like Troy Perry and the MCC for, you know, basically opening that door for gay and lesbian people to be able to come to church and find Christ and know that Jesus loves them and they have a place in God's kingdom. But now it's time for the transgender people to find their place in the kingdom of God and to know that God loves them and they can come back to their faith. And that's what Transgenders Faith is all about, is bringing these people back into the sheepfold, as it were.
Yeah, because that's one of the tragedies, that if you are a person of faith and you are transgender and you have been in your church all your life and have lived either a religious life, whether it's Christian or not, a religious life, and then suddenly you become trans, you come out, and suddenly this welcoming church that you've been dedicated to, certainly unchristian-like, mm-hmm. turns their back on you when Christ mm-hmm. himself would have never done that.
A hypocritical Christian?
Mm-hmm. Oh, please, what? Don't get me started. I still want to be on the air next week.
Exactly.
But it's a shame because, you know, when we face that, it's as a trans person, we face a lot of obstacles. We face family who will turn their back on us. We face friends. We will lose our jobs. All of these things are potential things. But to have your faith turn their back on you, yeah. The people who you've spent years with and have been loved and accepted, or apparently loved and accepted, except it was all superficial. Mm-hmm. When it comes to facing something that doesn't feel comfortable to them, you're denied even the simplest of recognition of your own faith. So I think this is wonderful. Now, I understand, I was reading through the brochure, and there's intent, which I wanted to ask you about that. And who wrote that? Who created that portion of it?
Let's read the intent.
Yeah, go ahead and read it, Brian.
Okay. It is our intent and goal to make sure members of the GLB and T's underlined community know that there is a warm welcome awaiting you here.
And the here meaning the church. So, where did that come from? Where did you get that? What inspiration inspired that?
Well, quite honestly, we didn't write that. We wrote this part up here. And the pastors, I'm on the radio.
The pastors wrote it.
I'm pointing at something on the radio.
Oh, that's okay.
But we wrote the part up here about a place of faith, hope, and love, a place to call home. And I got this part, when I got the inspiration for that from Corinthians 13, when it says, when that which is perfect has come, all these things are going to be done away with, but the three things that will remain is faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these
is love.
Now, our pastors came up with that. But in reality, what it comes down to is if you come to Community Gospel Church or if you come to a Transgenders of Faith meeting, you're going to be greeted with a warm welcome, a hug, a handshake, and just like you're part of the family. Anybody that walks through those doors, and we've been a member of that church for over a year and a half now, we've never seen anybody not welcomed with a hug, a handshake, and let them know that they're welcome there. And it didn't matter who they were, if they were gay, straight, lesbian, transgendered, a bum off the street. It didn't matter. What matters is that everybody is welcome in the kingdom of God. We were discussing earlier today about how Jesus went to the least of the kingdom. Tell them about what we were talking about how Jesus went to people on the streets and stuff and ministered to them.
That's right. Jesus, he hung out with prostitutes, tax collectors, lepers, all of the people in his day the religious leaders shunned and said were not worthy to go into the temple. They weren't worthy to worship. And those were the people that Jesus hung out with and ministered to and told them that they were accepted in God's kingdom.
And I think it's very important, Jennifer, as what you were saying, all these people that have loved you in your church, you grew up in this church all your life, and these people have loved you and loved you and loved you, and then they find out one day that you're not the same person they thought you were. You've came out as a gay or a lesbian person, or you've came out as a transgender person, and they shun you. And we want to break that all down and say, you know what? Jesus don't shun anybody. Jesus died on the cross so that all men could come to repentance, so that all men could know him and know his love.
But you know, what happens is that these individuals and organizations and churches, they pull excerpts from the Bible and twist it in such a way to create hate instead of love. And it's, you know, especially when they throw Deuteronomy at us and some of the Jewish laws and call me and have called an abomination. And, you know, because I wear the clothes of another of the other gender. And I'm right in that same list with shellfish. That's an abomination.
Right.
And wearing cloth of two different types of thread. You know, little... Where is their mind? Are they so closed-minded that they can't even see what's in front of them?
You know, Jesus said that no man could fulfill the law. The law is just so complicated. The law is just so complicated. And Jesus said, I have not come to destroy the law, but I've came to fulfill the law. And even back in the days when the people were living under the law, the priests still had to go into the temple every year to get cleansed for their sins, to make atonement for the sins of the people.
Exactly.
Thank God we don't have to do that anymore. If we make a mistake in life, we just go to Jesus and say, Father, forgive me. I love you. I made a mistake. Because we're all human. We're all going to make mistakes. But going back to your comment about Deuteronomy 22 and 5.
Yeah.
See, I've heard that so many times.
Oh, it's... And, I want to cry, you hear.
But if you take, parts of the law and the shellfish thing and all that kind of stuff, there's so many things in the law that they leave out. They find these issues that are important to them. They find these issues that are important to them and start, you know, hammering on these things, but they leave the other things out. So what we stress and what is very important for people to know is that we live in the New Testament time. And Jesus died on the cross to fulfill the law and atone for all of our sins and make a way for all people to come to him. For, you know, we have all heard John 3:16 quoted so many times, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believed in him would not perish but have everlasting life. That includes transgendered people.
Well, and also when Christ gave us the 11th commandment, of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, which is, you know, some of the way that certain elements treat our community, and being especially sensitive and passionate about it, it's ridiculous. It's definitely not the way they would want to be treated.
No.
But because of the twisting and manipulation of certain verses, it creates an environment of hate toward us. We're less than due to this twisted view of the Scripture.
And that's why it's so important that we break down those barriers. That's why it's so important that we let people know that the greatest commandment of all is to love the Lord thy God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Well, we wouldn't have nearly as many problems in the world if that were true in all cases. And it's just a shame that it's not.
And Transgenders of Faith is a ministry that is focused on breaking down those barriers and bringing people into the saving knowledge of Jesus. People that have been kicked out of churches, people that have had problems in their past, they don't have to be problems anymore, because there is a place of faith, hope, and love that God wants to renew these people and restore them to His kingdom and to the love that He wants to give them. And I'll tell you something. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I've been to a lot of churches, and I preach in a lot of churches. And when I stand behind the pulpit at Community Gospel Church and preach, and I see those people in the audience, I know they love me. They loved me before they knew I was transgender. And they still love me. You know, and I couldn't ask for anything greater than to know. And it's not just the superficial love of a group of people, but it's the love of God. And I knew they loved me when I came there as a lesbian. You know, we came out as we were out lesbians when we got there, and they accepted us and loved us. And but when I preached a message on February 15th, and I came out to the whole church as a transgender person, and those people just received me and loved me, and the love just keeps coming. And so that's why I encourage transgender people, you know, if you're looking for a church home, if you're looking for a place to restore your faith and your hope, and you need a place of love, I encourage you to come to GGOF. I encourage you to come to Community Gospel Church and let God love you.
Well, you know, the thing that, and I hear this so many, when you see the name, you know, gospel in there. Mm-hmm. Immediately, your mind does. So I go to evangelicals, and you know, the ones with the pitchforks and the torches that are looking for transgender people to crucify. Those things. But gospel really means the true interpretation of the gospels as were written.
The good news of Jesus.
Yes, and sort of they've sort of hijacked that with their rhetoric. Tell me more about the congregation itself, the church. If I were to go on Sunday, first of all, before we go any further, how would we get in touch with, is there a website or where we can get more information about that? I don't want to go any further without getting that out.
The church's website is communitygospel.org. Just as simple as that, communitygospel.org. And there's a sidebar you can pull down. On that sidebar, you can go down to TGOF, and it will give you all the information about Transgenders of Faith. And if you want to know about me and what I look like off the radio, you go to the church staff pull down and click on my name, and there's a picture of June and I there, and it gives us a little bit of background information about us.
So you got to remember that we're all 10s on the radio.
Absolutely.
Cecilia's an 11, actually.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
And Jennifer's a 12.
And are you saying that we're not off the radio? Are you implying that?
No, I tell them that this is nude radio, and they still believe that.
But if they want to find out about Transgenders of Faith, they can go to that website. If they want to send us an email, we have a secured email address. It's tgof@communitygospel.org. And I want transgender people to understand that we respect their privacy, and we want them to know that the website is safe, or the email address is safe, and TGOF is safe. It's a safe place for them to come. They don't have to worry about anything. And June and I are the only ones that have access to the email address. So if they want to send us an email and just really open up and pour out their heart, they're certainly welcome to. And we answer all emails that come in.
Now, your church, and the reason I asked about the congregation, is where we've been talking about Transgenders of Faith and the outreach that the church is doing. Mm-hmm. But the congregation itself, it's open and very affirming and warm and welcoming to all GLBT people.
Absolutely.
GLB people.
Absolutely.
And straights. And anybody else that wants to come. And that's important to know. There's no restrictions. There's no limitations that you're welcome to everyone.
There are no restrictions, no limitations, race boundaries or anything. We have black people, we have Hispanic people, we have Asian people, we have mixed race couples, we have straight people, we have gay people. We have everybody you can think of in our church, and that's the beauty of it, because the kingdom of God is just like a bunch of butterflies. There's no two just alike. Everybody's just slightly different. And so when you come to our church, you can clearly see our pastors are a gay male couple, and they're very loving and very caring, and they're certainly, and they are very, very supportive of transgenders of faith, and we're grateful to have that support.
Well, and I personally want to thank you with that, because I've done a lot of work, and the trans community has done a lot of outreach to different churches around the city, and one of them that used to, you know, they used to, that now has their services at the Summit, and their minister refused to meet with a group of transgenders to an outreach. One of the members that was there was the brother of the minister, as a matter of fact, which was rather interesting.
Scandalous.
Who's a member of our community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those sort of things come out where churches are denying, you know, acceptance, and the denying to some people the love of Jesus Christ, which is taught. Where they get that, they preach wonderful lyrical sermons every week, but yet deny the faith to some people, segments. So it's, anyway, I thank you for what y'all do. I really appreciate that. And tell us again about it before we wrap this up. I want to know more about it. One more time, tell us exactly where you meet, when you meet, and how to get in touch with you.
Transgenders of Faith meets the first Monday night of every month at Community Gospel Church, which is located at 608 Aurora, and that's in the Heights area, close to the intersection of 610 and 45 on the north side of Houston. And we have a website, communitygospel.org, and when you get on that website, just go down the pull-down menus and find the one that says TGOF, and that will give you all the information about Transgenders of Faith. You can also email us at tgof@communitygospel.org. We are also available to go and minister to other churches and help other churches, you know, do a transgender-type oriented ministry if they want to. But we're not pressuring or pushing anything. We just want people to know that God loves them. The transgender community has a church home. If they feel a need for that, it's available to them.
God loves you, and so do I.
And there is a place of faith, hope, and love, a place to call home.
All right. Thank you, Cecilia Wilson and June, the partners. And this is Queer Voices.
And we have something a little bit different here now. Because of a change in our programming schedule that we had planned for this evening, we're going to dig back into the archives, back all the way to the year 2000. This is an interview that Joan Devlin did with Elizabeth Stark, the author of a book called Shy Girl.
Edgy and risky for a while, but it's hard to sustain, and it is really important to know who else was out there. And I remember reading other books and you know, hearing testimony about like the old Butch Femme bar scene, and then just seeing political activism, you know, histories of political activism, and I remember I took a class in college called Queer Life and Social Change with Alan Barraby, who's an author, and a class called Women and Radical Social Movements with a woman named Marge Franz, who was, oh, I think in her 60s, but maybe late 60s, teaching the class, and just, you know, wonderful, wonderful role models for how to sustain a life of activism and being out.
Right, and you know, and the thing is, we still take risks today, but we are, or in most cases, I mean, even here in Texas, you don't run the risk of being arrested for wearing pants, you know, which, you know, in the bars here in Texas in the 50s and 60s, when the women's bars got raided, the women would get arrested for cross-dressing because
right.
they were in jeans.
Right, yeah, it's just amazing. It's just amazing, really. I think, although men, interestingly enough, you know, I think run the risk probably of being arrested for wearing dresses.
Right, I would say so, yeah.
So, I don't know why, you know, why, I mean, why it is that women are sort of eking out this place in terms of some sort of carefully bounded gender expressions that I think, you know, I probably aren't seen as real threats to the power structure, but little boys, you know, still can't be princesses for Halloween.
Right. I think that's going to change too over time. It's just going to take a little bit longer, and I think it's because women in general are a little bit more tolerant, shall we say, than men. And that's a broad generalization. Of course, I've known intolerant women in my time and vice versa. But we don't, I don't know, I think we're just a little more attuned to people's feelings and a little less worried about appearances in most cases.
Right, right. But it's still, you know, it's still being regulated by mothers as well as fathers, I think. So, you know, I actually think it's a real feminist issue because we have to start saying that, you know, being a fairy princess is always a costume and always a dress-up role, and it's as much so for women as for men, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as I said, that's something that'll hopefully change over time. We can only hope. But I want to talk to, getting back, not just to the book, but about you. Is this your first book?
This is my first novel.
And what others do you have? This can't be your only novel. Please tell me that.
Actually, no, thank you very much. I'm working on my second book right now. I'm in the revision stages. So I'm plugging away. In fact, I'm just finishing. I teach, and as soon as finals are over this week, I'm going to zero in on the book and try and shuffle the pages into order.
And can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, it has some themes that are the same, and it's about it's also about identity in certain key ways. It's about somebody who's searching for her birth mother, and she's a femme dyke, so I'm taking another angle. And it's also about marriage. It's about heterosexual marriage and gay marriage. And it's about stripping. And it's about women's friendships, both, you know, gay and straight. So those are some of the things that I'm working with in it.
And do you have any idea when it'll be published? Or
I don't. I haven't shown it to my editor at FSG yet. I'm hoping once I take this break to work on it that I'll get to send it over to him and see what he thinks about it. And then we'll, you know, I hope we'll set something up.
So what got you started in the writing career?
You know, I've always written. I remember when I was about 8 or 9, I started a novel. Something like, I will always remember that plum tree summer. So it makes me laugh at the sort of great sense of nostalgia I had at 8. But, and I didn't finish it. This is the first novel I finished, Shy Girl. But I always wrote and expressed myself well through writing. And I was interested in acting, and I did a lot of political activism and other things, but writing just was the consistent thing. So when I graduated from college, I did women's studies, and when I realized that the revolution hadn't happened and I now had to figure out what to do with the rest of my life, I really realized that you know, writing was the thing that I loved and did best. So I sort of devised a way to teach myself how to write and just do a lot of it.
Well, you did a great job. You know, I'm telling all my listeners now, Shy Girl, I mean, you know, what I put in my column was that, you know, it would make a great Christmas present if you can bear to part with it. So, you know, you probably should go out and buy two because I, you know, like I said, I picked it up. It was late and I thought I'd go ahead and start it and then put more into it the next day. And the next thing I knew, it was 3:00 in the morning and I was like, well, I might as well finish it now.
That's what I love to hear, because it's so funny, you know, the writer labors alone writing the book and then the reader's there, you know, in her bed reading the book alone, but somehow there's this connection, but it's made across so much time and distance. It's great to get to hear about it.
Well, it was fascinating, and you know, the theme it pointed up to, another theme that I liked about it was that sometimes you can find help in the most unlikely of places. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the very person, for instance, Sasha and her mother were not the least bit close. They never understood each other, yet Alta and Sasha's mother understood each other implicitly, and it was mainly because of the way they both felt about Sasha.
Yeah, yeah. And yet, at least Sasha's mother was really able to help Alta, and I think Alta's great regret was that she couldn't help Mrs. Mallon more.
Right. So it's just a fantastic book. It's fantastic character studies. It captures the flavor of San Francisco so well. You know, I have a friend that lived in San Francisco, and he just loved it. It was like, yeah, you know, he knew every single person you named. I mean, he knew someone that fit into there. So I recommend it. It's called Shy Girl, and it's available in all major bookstores.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth, thank you so much for
thank
being on the
Joan.
Show tonight.
It was a pleasure.
And please send me a copy of the next novel.
I definitely will.
Okay, we look forward to talking with you again.
Great, thanks so much.
You're listening to KPFT.
I'll ask you again. I've always done things right. Money done told on her own soul. Sometimes I find it hard to breathe, but don't exhale, I miss money. But see, it doesn't mean a thing to me. I ain't celebrity, be down here on my knees.
It's been a long time I don't go to church.
I DJ the G-spot party after work. I ain't gonna lie, this and God show hurts.
I need to wear more like my polo shirts.
Papa talks sometimes don't stop.
I love me some Heineken.
Used to drink them derelict.
Baby, I done brought it down a bit. And I know that I need someone who can.
Birthing verses when I know for certain I ain't have to be here. Have been in at birth, what am I worth? Going to church, looking for God, but hurts wouldn't let me search. Father, forgive me for turning my back, turning the crack, turning my stacks. Like I guess I didn't need you for that. Spiritual warfare, yes, I believe in holy war. Cause half the time I'm fighting, I don't know who I'm fighting for. I know your name, Jesus, Elohim, El Shaddai. I spoke your name in the fetus. Even in the fetus, Seamus was trying to give reason for daddy to leave us in. Mama to abort the child for the struggle ain't ever alive. I can't say life is easy, but believe me, knowing I got a friend that'll never forsake me, make it worth breathing. Suicide made it tempting for leaving, but choose your purpose, reverse the cursing, and be considered it's a good enough reason.
I'll ask you again.
From 2006 and the CD Love of Money, that was Houston artist Miss Money and a song called Best Friend. This is Queer Voices.
Well, I was mistaken in thinking that the HRC dinner is this Saturday. It's a week from Saturday.
The
16th, yes.
And we're
yes.
like 50-some days till Pride. So we'll be talking about that. Of course, next week we start fundraising.
Yay, get your checkbooks
okay.
out.
Okay. Yes. All of our friends on Facebook, please think about contributing something and putting it, if even anyone listening to the show.
Just call
show.
In.
Yeah,
just
call in. Let us know that you're supporting us, whether you can contribute or not. But also, those of you who are out there who would normally contribute to KPFT, when you do so, mention Queer Voices. Say you want to support Queer Voices and thank them for having us on.
Because essentially, your donation is a vote, voting for Queer Voices and
exactly.
Gay Radio in Houston.
And you, and every dollar is a vote, so, you know, vote as many times as you can.
Yeah, and we have a goal of what? Like, I don't know if we can say that.
No, we'd better not say that.
It's a couple hundred dollars that we need to raise.
It's not so much that our listening audience can't support us.
Exactly. The millions and millions of people.
Absolutely.
If everybody gave
absolutely.
A penny.
Absolutely. Well, what's going on this next week?
Well, I think everything is on hold until HRC, which is on the 16th, but they do have the Pride Idol kickoff this past weekend, and I heard it was a spectacular success.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And now they're going into the kind of the second rounds that are held every Thursday at Guavaland. Yeah.
That's good. So we can hear the Pride Idol contestants
live.
At Guavaland.
Uh-huh. Every Thursday night.
Every Thursday night. What time?
I think 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. That's
yeah.
great. I tried to get a couple of people I know who are straight to, you know, entertainers that are amateur mm-hmm. to go try out for it after he said that they wanted everyone of talent.
Yeah, and I heard that there's a tremendous talent upswing this year, so there'll be, you know, better singers and better entertainment.
Oh, that's great. So take the opportunity. Go out to Guava Lamp, support Guava, as well as Pride Idol.
Absolutely. But I'm trying to fill a table for HRC, so it's kind of stressful for me, and that's on the 16th. But the speaker is Christine Baranski, and we know her from, I guess...
Sybil. I know her from Sybil.
Sybil, but Mamma Mia.
That's right.
She was in the movie Jeffrey.
Mamma Mia.
Yes, she was in Jeffrey. That was a pretty good movie.
Yes.
Cokie Roberts is going to be at the Houston Public Library tomorrow morning at 9:15 a.m. She is an NPR commentator, and her father was a congressman from the New Orleans area, and he died in a plane crash, and her mother took over that seat, and she is a wonderful, wonderful commentator and knows a lot about the stuff going on. She's going to be talking about her book, We Are Our Mother's Daughters. What else is going on? Caucus meets this Wednesday.
The reception starts at 6:30, and then the meeting starts at 7. Come out. It's at the Haven Center, and that's... Do you remember that?
It's on West Alabama, right at around Dunleavy. It's part of the State Stephen's
Church. Saint Stephen's.
Right next to the chocolate bar.
So chocolate bar. If you know, everybody seems to know where the chocolate
landmark,
bar is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Come join us. Be there if you're part of the community. If you're a member, please show up. If you're not a member, come join the caucus.
And if you're on the internet, please join our Facebook group. We have a group for Queer Voices, and what we provide is the show rundowns on the Monday of the show and also any events that we may have.
Next week, we're putting together a panel in the first hour, trying to get some younger people involved. In fact, if you got some suggestions, email me, jack@queervoices.org. Younger people to talk about the future of the community and what they think about, what they know about, what they're, what they'd like to do, how, the community is progressing, how they see the community. So hopefully it will be a good show. We have confirmed a guest from Global, which is University of Houston group, and we're trying to get a few other people on the panel.
Yeah, in the second hour, we're going to have Susie Laux, local radio personality. She's going to be here, and we're going to be talking about internet dating.
Which is the rage these days.
It's the rage now,
but it
does have some pitfalls that we all need to know about,
yeah.
And we're going to try to address a number of the questions, and, it's going to be a good show next week. So
it's always a good show, but especially good next week.
Especially good next week. This is Queer Voices. I'm Jennifer Renee.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jack Dwinski.
You have been listening to Queer Voices. Heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman,
and Jack Polensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The streets of Houston turn into a concrete canvas of kaleidoscopic color as more than 250 artful autos and mobile masterpieces roll along Allen Parkway between Montrose and downtown. It's the 22nd annual Houston Art Car Parade presented by the Orange Show Center for Visionary Art. This annual celebration of all things wheeled and wonderful is the day Houston shows its wild side to the world, and KPFT will be there live. Join us at the Starting Line Party, which is at Taft Street, beginning at 11 a.m. The parade rolls at 1 p.m., creating a three-mile-long party and the world's most colorful traffic jam. It's a day to celebrate the artist in everyone at Houston's largest free public art event. For more information, log on to orangeshow.org or call 713-926-6368. KPFT, Houston.
Mothers for Clean Air offers Ozone Theatre, a free interactive program for elementary school classrooms about air pollution, its sources, and effects on human health. Aligned with state education standards, this award-winning interdisciplinary curriculum employs cutting-edge, drama-based techniques. Trained workshop leaders visit classrooms and lead a 35-minute activity that gets students up and learning on their feet. Teachers and students agree. Ozone Theatre is a fun, relevant lesson for Houston area students. For more information or to book Ozone Theatre for your classroom, email Mothers for Clean Air at info@mothersforcleanair.org or call 713-528-3779. 713-528-3779. KPFT, Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.